All right, Mr. Chairman, I believe we're ready to start. It's just after 1, and we have folks who are all online through Zoom and in person.
Okay, good afternoon. We'll go ahead and start the Alaska Redistricting Board meeting on April 13th at 1:02. And we're both in person in the LIO office, I believe, and also online. We have a draft agenda before us. The first item, though, is to call us to order and establish the quorum as present. Peter, could you please call the roll?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Member Behnke?
I'm here.
Member Bromeo?
Present.
Member Markham?
Here.
Member Simpson?
Here.
And Member Binkley?
I'm here.
We have all members present.
And the first item on the agenda is adoption of the agenda. So any discussion on the agenda or a motion to adopt the agenda?
So moved. This is Nicole.
This Go is ahead,
Melanie.
Nicole.
I'll second.
Okay, motion before us and seconded to adopt the agenda as presented. First item is discussion of proposed Anchorage Senate pairings. Nicole, go ahead. You've got your hand up, and then I think Bud's got his hand up.
Thank you very much.
I would like
to call
Chair, my hand was up on the
number
agenda.
2 and move to a vote on option number 2 as the board's plan.
Mr. Chair, I second Nicole's motion.
Okay. Maybe there was a bit of confusion there. Sorry about that. But there's a motion before us and seconded to adopt option 2. Is there objection to the motion? Well, first let's have discussion on the motion. Discussion on the motion. Hearing no discussion. Go ahead, Bud.
I'm sorry. I was inadvertently talking over Ms. Borromeo. I had a question going to the agenda, and it moved on without me getting that in. My question was, if we get through the agenda and adopt pairings, should we put something on about dealing with the truncation question or any other kind of housekeeping things if we do get through this?
Maybe what I would suggest is, since we have a motion, a live motion on the floor, is we can go back and revisit the agenda anytime, make adjustments to the agenda later on if we so choose. So why don't we stick with the motion that's before us, and then we can go back to that.
That's fine, Mr. Chair. And then along the same lines, I believe I was talking over Ms. Borromeo, so I didn't clearly hear the motion. So could that be repeated, please?
Nicole, could you please repeat the motion?
Thanks. I'm happy to, and I'm sorry about the leg there, Bud, and I appreciate you asking questions. The motion on the floor is that I move to call the question on option number 2 and move to a vote on that plan.
Okay, so that was different than the first motion that I heard. It sounded like you want to cut off debate by calling for the question now in the body of the motion.
I'm happy to engage in debate, and I will entertain a friendly motion from the one who seconded my motion, but I do want some time certain stoppage on debate and to move to a vote on option 2.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll second that. My intention, at least, wasn't to end discussion and debate. Actually, seconded the motion so that we can enter into discussion and debate.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That was the original motion, as I interpreted it. I didn't hear a calling for the question in the motion itself. Typically, you'd make the motion, second the motion, and then if there is another motion to stop debate and call the question immediately, then that's a separate motion that would, depending on if it succeeded or not, would either end debate or allow debate to continue. So I didn't hear that Melanie wanted to cut off debate in her second of the motion.
No, I did not intend for that. And then just for clarity's sake, I believe it requires a 3 out of 5 vote to end debate, which I learned from the last time in November. And I do have to, I have discussion and discussion to offer on this motion, Mr. Chair. But I see Bud still has his hand up.
Yeah, I think, Nicole, are you willing to amend your motion just for sticking to the motion itself and allowing debate at this point? And then you can certainly, it's available to you at any time to call the question to try and stop debate.
Yes, I'm not trying to stop debate. I'm sorry that it got confused. I would like to move option number 2 and entertain a vote on that after discussion of the board. Thank you.
Okay, so the motion is to adopt option 2. And Melanie, you're okay with seconding that motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, the motion is before us to adopt option 2. Debate on the motion. And Melanie, you've got your hand up, and then Bud.
I would defer to Bud. Let him go first since he's got his hand down now.
Okay, go ahead, Melanie.
If Bud doesn't have anything to offer, I'll go ahead. First of all, I want to thank all of the Alaskans who called in to testify and provide us with perspectives, and those who submitted proposed Senate pairings. Looking back to November, the alternative compromise map, if you will, that I had developed actually had also split Eagle River. And based on all of the new information from testimony and being able to have time to review proposed Senate pairings, I now realize that that splitting of Eagle River would have been flawed. So I'm grateful again for the opportunity for public comment and time to evaluate the options. The splitting of Eagle River option 3B is not the most contiguous, as it splits the community of Eagle River, a community of interest, in half, literally, by a street, and creates a Senate district with the mountain range, wilderness, and unpopulated areas in between. I don't disagree that there are things in common between Eagle River and Hillside and Eagle River and Jay Bear. We heard from a lot of folks that there are actually a lot of things in common, but when I look at, if I looked at it as a Venn diagram, I would have Eagle River and Eagle River with the most overlap in terms of contiguity, compactness, and socioeconomic integration. And one part of Eagle River has some overlap with Hillside, and one part of Eagle River has some overlap with Jay Bear. But overwhelmingly, when you look at the transportation corridors, the number of Senate districts you have to travel through to get from one part of a Senate district to another, I looked at the Constitution, and the Constitution requires us to consider contiguity. In fact, Judge Matthews of the Supreme Court used the analogy of connecting Girdwood and downtown as a false contiguity, and our attorney's response was that was also the board's position. So that was back when we were before the Supreme Court, because it uses links that are unpopulated. Also, under the record, Member Simpson had also, when referring to Southeast, he had said the part that connects the north part of that to the southern part basically has almost no people in it. So it's basically a fiction in my mind. Now, mind you, that was referring to Southeast, but when I look at the 3B pairings, I think that also applies there. The Constitution says each Senate district shall be composed as near as practicable of 2 continuous House districts. Consideration may be given to local government boundaries. Drainage and other geographic features shall be used in boundaries wherever possible. From the Superior Court ruling on page 27 of the 171 document, the court has defined the contiguity criterion to require territory which is bordering or touching, or more specifically, that every part of the district is reachable from every other part without crossing the district boundary, Hickel versus Southeast. But in light of Alaska size and numerous archipelagos, the court noted that a contiguous district may contain some amount of open sea within reason and subject to the other Section 6 criteria. The Alaska Supreme Court has defined a contiguous territory as one which is bordering or touching. The court determined that a district may be defined as contiguous if every part of the district is reachable from every other part without crossing the district boundary, i.e., the district is not divided into two or more discrete pieces. The court acknowledges that Alaska is a unique state with many islands and massive coastline. This reality means that without limitations on the definition of contiguous, a coastal district could be considered contiguous with any other coastal district by reason of sharing the open sea. For example, District 7 covering the Aleutian Islands could be permissibly paired in a southeast district despite being separated by the Gulf of Alaska. In Kenai, the Supreme Court noted this anomalous result and determined that contiguity could not be separated from the concept of compactness when crafting Senate districts. In my mind, option two is therefore both most contiguous and compact comparatively with the alternative that we have. Peter, can you please pull up the map that shows the mountains and the transportation corridors?
Yes, I'll have it up shortly.
While he's doing that, I also want to speak to equal rights. So in my mind, equal rights does not mean more rights for some. It doesn't mean maximal rights at the expense of others. The other thing that I'm concerned about with the Supreme Court's findings and the remand from the Superior Court to us was to correct the constitutional deficiencies in the map that was adopted in November. They specifically noted partisan gerrymandering as intent was stated on the record and also reflected in the outcome. This time, perhaps the intent has not been verbally stated, but the outcome is the same. This is still gerrymandering, just in a different way in my mind, because the intent to separate Eagle River to give it more representation, which was stated in November, is still being considered in option 3D. Just going back also to compactness and how the courts have said that contiguity is related to compactness, the Supreme Court had defined compact territory. Compactness is defined as having a small perimeter in relation to the area encompassed, such that bizarre designs do not result. The court has provided some examples that may violate this criterion, such as corridors of land that extend to include a populated area or appendages attached to otherwise compact areas. When you look at the map, there is literally a mountain range separating the two house districts that are being proposed to be paired in option 3D. And when you look at how you get from one part of the proposed Senate district to the other, you see how many other districts you have to cross in order to get from one to the other. I believe that the court sent this back to us to correct it, not to find a new way to continue to try to give Eagle River more representation. And so that's why, Mr. Chair, I will be voting in favor of option two. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Nicole, go ahead.
Thank you. I don't have any comments at this time, but questions, and I realize that we're doing this over Zoom. If there are any questions or concerns from either you, Bethany, or Bud as to the strength of article of option two compared to option three. I'd like to engage in some of that discussion.
So you have a question for one of us?
I do have a question, yes, for you and Bethany, because I've been listening to the public hearings and reading the testimony, and in my mind, you have both continued to champion MAP 3B. And I'm trying to find at this point, what is the rationale for splitting Eagle River?
Well, I think really, you know, the motion was made to adopt version two, and now we're having debate on that motion. So it's not really a general discussion. It's individual board members stating where they stand on the motion that's before us. So it's more of a debate on where people stand on the motion itself. So, you know, when I express where I'm going to stand on this motion, you know, I'll address some of those things, and I would imagine other members would as well. But I don't necessarily want to do it in a manner that it's a questioning back and forth.
That's fine. The inference then is that I'm left to create the connections versus hearing it from you and to try and come up with your rationale. And I'd much rather hear it from you if you're willing to put it on the record as to why Eagle River has to be in two separate Senate seats. And I'm not just saying you personally, but Bethany as well has expressed, again, strong support for MAP V3. I'm not sure where Bud lies at this point, so I'll welcome everybody into the discussion.
Yeah. Again, I think we should just debate where we stand on the motion. And members don't have to. They don't have to express why they're going to vote the way they do, but that's the appropriate time to do it. But it's really, I think we're beyond the point of discussing it. I think we're to the point of answering the question that is before us, which is the motion. Do we support version two or not? Let's see. Bud, you had your hand up, and then Melanie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I might as well jump into my general comments, because whether you're for or against one of the options necessarily informs what happens with the other options. So in my mind, the discussion is kind of linked between the two. And, you know, I haven't weighed in as much as some members have up to now, my sense being that these hearings were opportunities for the public to talk and not us to kind of take up the time and talk over them. So in that context, as Melanie said, I really would like to thank everyone who participated over the past several months, and especially in the last couple of weeks or few days. I'm sure, like the rest of you, I've gone through and read the written testimony and the transcripts of the oral testimony, and have tried my best to keep up to speed on all of that and to take into consideration what everybody said. I do note that, you know, for many people testifying in a public context, out loud, on video or in person, is really difficult and daunting for kind of most civilians, regular folks. So I appreciate that a lot of people did take the opportunity to submit written testimony as well. I know there's been some discussion of the importance of written versus in person. I don't see a difference in that personally. So just want to let the people that submitted written testimony know that I consider that as important as somebody who came in person. So that brings us to where we are now. We are addressing the matters that were sent to us on remand after the original pairings were challenged and then appealed and then remanded. So at this point, we have two specific tasks, and happily, I think we have taken care of the first one, which was the Cantwell appendage, so-called. The board had a straightforward solution to that. It was resolved, I will say, almost with consensus, Mr. Chair. And I think it's not necessary to beat that to death or anything. We can move on to the real issue before us today, which is the pairing for Senate District K. That was the other specific remand item. Now, when this first came up, the testimony was very adamant that we address what became option number one, which had been before the board and the public now for several months, had been thought about, considered, and all of that. I at least urged the board to take a little more time, think about that, get some testimony, new testimony. And in the end, in the beginning, the public testimony definitely favored that option number one, at least in terms of a plurality. While we're not necessarily following what the most testimony supports, it was notable that there was a lot of support for option one. And had we gone with that, we basically would have adopted a Senate pairing that went way beyond our charge given to us by the court and our constitutional duties, because it would have involved repairing and renumbering the entire Anchorage municipality, changing all eight districts. And on reflection and after hearing some testimony and advice, we determined not to do that. And after thinking about it, the board actually did vote unanimously to remove option one from further consideration. So that was, the board doesn't always act in opposing factions or whatever. The board often works toward a single goal. And there was an example where we all agreed on what would be the right thing to do. So having removed that from consideration, we then received three other options for Senate pairings. The first, the East Anchorage plaintiffs offered one that they had prevailed in their challenge of our pairing of Senate District K, and so they brought what became option number two to resolve the District K problem. And then AFFER, which was another group or individual that had participated extensively from the beginning, brought forth another option, which became option three, and then subsequently modified that a little bit, which is how we got to 3B, and that also was the option that board member Markham came up with. There also was a third option presented by a member of the public. That option involved the necessity to make it work. You had to change a house district. We were not prepared as a board overall to get into changing house districts. And so rather than confuse ourselves and the public by having a third option that at least some of us felt we just weren't going to actually entertain, we dropped that from consideration as well, and leaving us with the two that are before us now. Interestingly, too, in my mind, between option 2 and 3B, there actually are a number of things in common. We tend to look at this as, two extreme issues, but there actually are a bunch of common features. Both option 2 and 3B only change 4 districts. And that seems like a reasonable number. The fact that both independently came up with a solution that changes 4 districts, to me, tends to lend validity or credibility to that level of change. So I appreciate that. Also, both chose to deal with Senate District K in exactly the same way. They joined House Districts 20 and 21, which again was probably the simplest and most obvious solution to the mandate of the court and the District K problem. They also, if I'm correct, both options leave in place the pairings of districts 11 and 12 and 15 and 16. So there's a number of things that are the same in both versions. Obviously, then the board is faced with the hard decision of what happens with the 4 House districts that are affected by the 2021 pairing, those being the Eagle River Chugiak districts, the South Anchorage Hillside, the J-Bear or Military District, and downtown. So that a lot of preface. Like I said, I haven't done a lot of talking till now, so you have to bear with me as I tee this up and kind of move forward. The differences then, going through that analysis, is whether we pair districts 17 and 14, that would be downtown and the military district, or 23 and 24, which you could call military and Chugiak. So how you decide those two options then pretty much drives what happens with the Eagle River District 22 and the south side of Chugiak. And it starts narrowing it down. You have when you make a decision, you have fewer other options to choose from as you go forward. So on the as far as the motion before us on option number 2, I personally find the pairing of 23 and 24 being the military with Chugiak to be the more compelling version or solution. I think pairing the military bases with downtown overlooks J-Bear as a significant community of interest. And I think that in itself could expose us to a constitutional challenge from that constituency. We heard a lot of testimony about interactions between Eagle River, Chugiak, and J-Bear, that area has essentially developed as a bedroom community for the military families. They send their kids to middle school and high school there. I'm sure there are exceptions to that, but again, I felt the overall weight of that testimony was compelling toward that pairing. So I've heard the argument made repeatedly that under the court ruling, Eagle River / Chugiak has to be paired with Eagle River, but that's actually not what the court said. The court decreed that the way Eagle River was placed in the proclamation version was done at the expense of Muldoon. At the expense of Muldoon was the key to that part of the decision or the order. The order directed us to reconfigure Senate District K. It didn't say anything about L, District L, although the East Anchorage plaintiffs had expressly asked for that as part of their relief, and the court did not grant the relief requested regarding District L. They told us, or rather the court told us, to repair the problematic aspect of District K, and both versions offered by the board make that repair. And so that should be sufficient to meet both the exact language and the intent or the sense of what the court was concerned about. If Eagle River is paired together or split, either way does not happen at the expense of Muldoon, because Muldoon is taken care of under both versions. So that issue is eliminated. As far as the pairing, I don't think there's any real advantage to the Eagle River districts in terms of splitting them or combining them. The House district is the same. Those House districts were approved by both levels of the court. They are, all within the municipality. They all contain approximately the same number of people. And whichever two you pair for a Senate district, there's going to be 36 or 37,000 people in it, and they all get a vote, and they're all going to have a senator and a representative. So the other point is that districts 23 and 24 is a pairing that is already in place, and so under option 3B, that isn't changed. So if there are folks out there who have already thought about running or not running or whatever, that stays in place, and it's just one less thing to be changed. So that brings us to the pairing of 22 and 9. There's been a lot of testimony and discussion about that, again, on both sides. When you make the pairings that are described for J-Bear and Eagle River, it leaves 22 as, with no place else to go really except 9. And so that just kind of flows naturally from that other decision regarding 23 and 24. So the House districts have been settled. No one complained about those. The most discussion in that has been about contiguity and the concept of as nearly as practicable has been discussed. The concept of nearly as practicable, I think, has been misconstrued a lot of the time in those discussions. Practicable just basically means possible or able to be done, capable of being done. The way it's used in the Alaska Constitution is actually not to say that as near as practicable means you have to have like the best pairing. It's stated as an exception to the contiguity rule where it is not practicable to have the two House districts paired together because they don't touch and there isn't another way to do it. So as nearly as practicable was always intended as an exception to the contiguity rule, not an enhancement of the contiguity rule that you had to find the best, most compact, whatever. The pairing of House districts to create a Senate district is not the same rule as you have for the creation of a compact, contiguous, and socioeconomically integrated House district. It's a different thing. And while we have sought to find pairings that have some reasonable, rational relationship, it's a different standard than what applies to the creation of a House district. And there's nothing wrong with the pairing of 9 and 22. They are contiguous. If you look at the map, they have a lengthy, maybe 35-mile border that is shared. They consist of two districts that are, I think, socioeconomically and demographically similar in many ways. And, of course, they are, like the other House districts, they are included in the municipality of Anchorage and therefore are legally socioeconomically integrated based on precedent. The other thing that a lot of people mentioned was that you have to drive out of the district to go from one side of it to the other. The concept of transportation contiguity has been debunked as a constitutional requirement. It's just not so. It doesn't matter. The contiguity question is essentially a visual, I have said before, binary question. You can look at the map. Something is either contiguous or not. These are contiguous. They touch. We've heard the concept of false contiguity brought up, and I think my name has been invoked in that context. The false contiguity that I have referred to was in the proposed pairing that the community of Skagway had favored, and they had drawn a connection, you know, through the water where nobody was, and they went around the main part of Juneau in order to connect themselves with the downtown area. I consider that a false contiguity. It was not compact, and in fact, the board's proposal for that district did end up prevailing, and that false contiguity was rejected. The upshot is that districts 22 and 9 have 35 miles or so of real hard on the map contiguity. To kind of wrap up, I want to briefly address the charges of partisan gerrymandering that have been tossed around with some frequency throughout this process. The final day of testimony on Saturday, two Republican senators and a member from Governor Dunleavy's administration spoke out against option 3B. And I can note here that I'm an appointee of the governor's, and yet I find myself kind of lining up in favor of option 3, even though somebody from that office apparently thinks the other one is a better idea. If the board's option 3 is some kind of naked partisan attempt to gerrymander the map to protect Republicans, as some have claimed, then why is it that Republican senators Laura Reinbold and Roger Holland have testified so vehemently against it? Apparently, they feel that something in option 3 harms them in some way. But if it does, that fact obviously, clearly, goes against the argument that any of the drafters of option 3 made any effort to protect or enhance Republican seats or interests. So having considered all of that, I believe that if there's anything partisan in either of these two maps, the most partisan is the proposed pairing of J-Bear and downtown. I believe this would diminish the voice of our valued Alaska military personnel. I can't support that, and I am, just to be clear, going to be voting for option 3B. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Bud. Let's see, Nicole, you haven't had a chance to weigh in on the debate. And then I see Melanie, you've got your hand up as well. Why don't we go to Nicole, and then maybe we should go to all the members first for an opportunity to state where they're at. And then Melanie, maybe come back for a second round. Are you okay with that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am.
Okay,
want me to take my
Nicole,
hand
you have the floor.
Thank you very
yeah,
much.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
Are we ready? Okay. Well, I appreciate Bud for being brave enough to at least put some rationale on the record for the board to respond to. I don't think it's going to come as a surprise that, unfortunately, I disagree with pretty much all of it. Our job when it comes to Senate pairing is to follow the Constitution. The Constitution is pretty dang clear when you look at Article 6, Section 6, and it says we shall pair districts that are as contiguous as practicable. Now, Bud spent some time talking about it's not an enhancement or an exception, yada, yada, yada. But again, in 2022, the most practicable means of traveling between these districts is via car. Nobody is walking over the Chugach Mountain. In fact, it's totally impassable for large parts of the year. These are significantly elder populations that live in these districts, and for us to expect that they are going to hike over the Chugach Range to get from Eagle River down to Whittier is just ridiculous. It's 87 miles nonetheless. It then falls to us as a board to put some rationale on the record for splitting Eagle River. And again, I hate to point it out, but we weren't just accused of partisan gerrymandering last time. In fact, we were found guilty, not once, but twice, by the Superior Court, and that decision was unanimously confirmed by the Supreme Court. I appreciate that Bud thinks that, you know, this is being done to protect Republicans, whatever that means. In fact, what we're doing here as a board is we are co-signing the Republican Party's cannibalization of themselves. They've got a problem with Senator Holland because he won't move certain bills out of his committee, and Senator Reinbold is a loose cannon and they can't control her. So the best option is instead of taking them out in broad daylight at the polls, they are going to come in through the dark of night under the redistricting cloak to pair them against each other. Again, when we were found guilty of gerrymandering the first time around, it was bad enough because we were hurting poor minority voters. Now Bud expects us to believe that it's okay so long as we're going after the rich white voters. The intent is the same. Bethany's intent has not changed. She said in November she put these pairings on the record so Eagle River could have more representation. Voila, Eagle River is still getting more representation. So back to the law, and who picked me on their bingo card for being the strict constitutionalist here? But here we are, back to the law, and we need to look at what the court is going to do when they get this case back again, which they will. Page 56, Judge Matthews is instructing what the court is going to do when they look at this new pairing that once again splits Eagle River. Quote, the court employs a neutral factors test to assess the legitimacy of the board's purpose in creating a Senate district. The board's purpose will be illegitimate if it diluted the power of certain voters systematically by reducing their Senate representation below their relative strength in the state's population. So going back to the census data, which we may not have looked at for some time, Eagle River is about 7% of the state's population. But yet, under this new plan, we are going to give them 20% of the Senate. It makes no sense, no sense whatsoever. So when the court's going to look at why we did this, they're going to look at, one, our process in making the decision, which has been delayed, and I know nobody wants to talk about it, but as soon as the Supreme Court released this decision, I have been calling for a public meeting. I've been saying, let's go, I'm ready, we need to get this done. June 1 is coming up. I hear back, oh, no, we've already noticed it for April 2nd. We can't possibly change it. But we assumed the decision was going to come out on April 1st. So I don't know why we had to burn an entire week off the clock, but we did. The court's also going to look at the substance of the decision. I haven't heard anything in the rationale that has bolstered splitting Eagle River. Instead, Bud says things like, well, last time we split Eagle River, it came at the expense of South Muldoon, and we're not doing that this time. Well, it's coming at the expense of South Anchorage. Is that any better? It's not better. Bud also says there's no advantage to Eagle River. I disagree. Eagle River is now going to have two senators. How is that not an advantage? And the fact that the districts are already in place and that they've been paired together in the past, again, we are on a redistricting board, redistricting. We come here every 10 years to redistrict based on the census data. but I'm not going to go hard in the paint anymore because I have exhausted myself in trying to get you three to look at the Constitution, to apply the Constitution, and you are not willing to do that. So instead, I am going to call on the courts to please exercise your Article 6, Section 11 powers. Do not send this back to us when you find it invalid, which you will. Draw the boundaries yourself. This board will continue to gerrymander. We will continue to hurt voters. We will go ahead and pick different districts next time so the Eagle River remains split. Don't send it back. We are defunct. We are derelict in our duties. I apologize to the state of Alaska. This has been an incredible, frustrating and expensive process. But if you send it back to us, Judge Matthews, I guarantee there is just going to be more slow rolling to blow the June 1 deadline. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Nicole. Bethany, did you want to make a statement about the motion before us?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will make a statement about the motion to support Proposal 2. So I'm very uncomfortable with Proposal 2, and that's primarily because it moved District 23, J-Bear, from its current pairing with District 24 by linking it with Downtown, which is District 17. Downtown has almost nothing in common with the military base. It absolutely makes the least sense of any possible pairing for District 23, J-Bear. Downtown is the arts, right? It's tourism. It's lots of professional services, and that is not what makes up J-Bear. So I really fear that a District 17 and District 23 pairing could be viewed as like an intentional action to break up the military community. The military J-Bear is absolutely a community of interest, I think. And so I think that, you know, choosing option two, which would pair District 17 with District 23, could be seen as an intentional attempt to try to break up that community of interest. So I support keeping the existing proclamation pairing of District 23 J-Bear with District 24 J-Bear to the Eagle River Peters Creek. And since Proposal 2 doesn't maintain this pairing, I will not be supporting Proposal 2. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Bethany. Maybe I'll just make a quick statement and state my position on the motion, and then we'll go to a second round. Melanie, if you want to make another statement, and then Nicole, I see your hand is back up again as well. Just like Melanie mentioned, and I think Bud as well, incredible, really, the outpouring of public testimony on this issue. It shows to me that Alaskans are engaged. They want to participate in this. They care about it. It's important to them. We had, I believe, 7 different public hearings on this. We heard directly from over 100 Anchorage residents, over 300 pieces of written testimony that's come in, and it's really heartening to see Alaskans engaged in this and caring about it. It's not easy because everybody can't be satisfied in it. We've boiled this down to 2 different options, and people are supportive or opposing one or the other. But when we step back, it's really our task on remand from the courts to replace Senate District K. The Superior Court was concerned about us pairing District 22 and 21. And it's heartening, really, to see that both of these proposals solve that problem. And I don't necessarily read into the court order that it requires us to pair those 2 Muldoon House districts that we have together, but I think it really is noteworthy that we've, in both options, that's really how we've come together to solve that part of the problem that the East Anchorage plaintiffs brought forward in the litigation. We've heard both from people who would prefer that District 22 and District 24 be paired together. Those people explained very articulately how they believe that Eagle River, Chudiak, Peters Creek, and those areas to the north, Eklutna, and other parts of those districts are closely tied together to each other. And I think that's valid. I think those are valid points. But I think, as Bud pointed out earlier, the two Republican senators, a former Republican representative that I served with back in the 80s, who was from that area, knows it well, and the former Republican Senate president, all testified to that, to pair those. And that, you know, particularly the Senate president, Senator Diesel, who I admire and respect greatly, have known her all my life, and I think highly of her. She testified that those two should be combined. So I think, as Bud opined, it's certainly not political, because there are factions within the Republican Party that are both on both sides of that issue, and I think legitimately. So I understand the logic of that position, and I've looked at that very carefully. Bud mentioned another member of the administration who I've known for many, many years, and I reached out to him to call him to ask his opinion about that, because he also supported 22 and 24 being together, and I was, or 23 and 24, and so was very interested in what his thought process was with that, and also pairing 22 and 24 and 23 and 17, the Jay Bear in downtown. So I take it seriously, and I think that those are legitimate beliefs by people. But we've also heard that there are significant similarities between District 22, Eagle River, and District 9, the Hillside. And we heard many, many people testify that both Eagle River and the Upper Hillside in Anchorage are generally more rural parts of the municipality. They have larger lot sizes, mostly single-family homes. Many of these areas, it was indicated in testimony, are served by road service districts, which is different than the other more core areas of the municipality. They share the Chugach Mountains and the Chugach State Park, which are really defining geographic features. And these people, that was also testified that they're close to the mountains. They deal with wildlife closer to their homes. There are higher snow loads that they deal with in the mountains, and also wildfire dangers as well that they share. So I can also appreciate that these similarities really could be important to a senator. I've had the privilege of being a senator, so I understand how, from that perspective, you look at different parts of your district. And I believe that a senator could well represent those two House districts and understand the priorities of their constituents in those two different, or those two House districts that are connected there. And when you look at Anchorage, it's, you know, visually, when you look at all of our House districts, it's made up mostly of smaller, compact, tightly populated urban districts, with a handful of the much larger, much more rural districts in the outskirts of the municipality. And I think Districts 22 and District 9 are both those large, more rural, and share a really long physical border. And that, to me, makes them contiguous, as has been pointed out by everybody, that's required by our Constitution. I also understand that the Eagle River Valley and the Upper Hillside, I think that was in testimony, many people testified to this, were formerly in a single Anchorage House district. So, and that was adjudicated by the courts and found to be compact, contiguous, and socioeconomically integrated, which is a much higher standard than we're really looking at for Senate districts that must be contiguous. And other points that have been made that I just want to reiterate really are about Jay Bear in District 23. And that's what I found one of the most compelling as well. was that Jay Bear physically extends into district from District 23 into District 24. And maybe if the underlying house districts had been different, that could have been drawn differently. But the fact is, they do extend into there. And it seems to be, undisputed that there are really a great deal of active and retired military that reside in District 24, Chudiak, Pierce Creek, the Eklutna area, and have that connection to 23. There's also a direct, of course, highway connection between those two districts along the Glen Highway, with gates into the military bases at the Arctic Valley and closer to town. And also Arctic Valley itself, a recreational area with golf courses, hiking, skiing, all those sorts of things that are common to both. We've also heard interesting testimony connecting Jay Bear to North Muldoon. And I think that's got legitimacy. And I can see, and I might have been comfortable when we were looking at the House districts of, or even the Senate pairings, of connecting that direction. But that really wasn't an option that was presented to us, and we really didn't have an opportunity with just the two different pairings that we looked at, two different options, to vet that with the public. I don't find it compelling, the idea of Jay Bear with downtown Anchorage. For 13 years, I had an office in downtown Anchorage with the Alaska Cruise Association. I've owned a condo in that district, still do. I've also been involved with the Alaska Railroad for many, many years and have familiarity with the railroad infrastructure in that area. And in my experience, the downtown area that is part of District 17 is primarily defined by, I think, Bethany, you pointed out some of that, professional services, attorneys, accountants, those sorts of things. Tourism is very big in downtown Anchorage. And the arts, of course, we have the Performing Arts Center down in that area, shopping, entertainment, all those sorts of things. And it has professional offices and professionals who live close by in that area. There are also large hotels down there, restaurants, convention centers, all of those things that I mentioned as well. So I just don't see, in my own experience, an enormous connection between those areas and the military population on Jay Bear, as opposed to the military in Jay Bear to the military bedroom communities to the north. I understand that the court has found that Eagle River to be a community of interest, but I think the testimony has also established very clearly that the military community is also a community of interest. And I don't believe that we should be trading one community of interest for the other. Several citizens have told us about how retired military in District 24 go to District 23 to shop on base, to get medical services there. We heard testimony that even from a former legislator in that area that the Eagle River High School would probably not even exist if it were not for the large military community that helps populate that school. So it seems to me that if a community of interest means anything, that a large group of people who share the same employer, they serve the same common purpose, fortunately, and for us in defending our nation. They share the same uniform. They reside in close proximity. As I mentioned before, the same medical care. They shop in the same places. That would fit the definition of a community of interest. And I'm convinced that there are two overlapping communities of interest in the northeast part of Anchorage, one that encompasses our military community, and then the one that encompasses Eagle River and Chugach neighborhoods. But both are valid and important to the people in those communities. but there is not a way for us to put all of those interests into a single Senate district. We've also heard concerns that putting the more conservative or swing district of the military base with downtown would drown out the military voters. That really echoes a concern that Superior Court, I think, had in its decision about regional partisanship. I think they used that phrase, regional partisanship. And in the two districts that really made up Senate District K, I think we need to be very cautious that such a pairing wouldn't invite, I think as other people have suggested, really invite a further legal challenge that would delay this process. So we've opted not to study the election returns or the election data. That was a decision we made together. So we have to take that testimony on the face value without really looking at the data ourselves. But if we are to take the court's advice to heart, I believe we have multiple options. I think it is better to stay away from something that raises such a concern. And that's the case that I would state with 3B. I've not heard any criticism of option 3B for pairing districts with drastically different voting patterns together. Ultimately, I found that both option 2, I believe, and option 3 are valid approaches. I respectfully disagree with the notion that one plan is right and the other plan is wrong, or that for people who prefer one plan have good motives, and maybe the people who prefer another plan have bad motives. I would rather think that it's a hard choice. It's made all the more difficult by the tremendous amount of very compelling and competing information and testimony that we've received in the last week or week and a half. And I really believe that we've got two good options before us. And there are likely other options that we could have also looked at, but I weigh the two. It's, for me, I'm more comfortable with option 3B, and that's what I plan to support this afternoon. Melanie and then Nicole.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do appreciate the three of you actually putting some kind of rationale for us to digest in terms of how you're planning to vote on this motion. One of the things I failed to mention earlier that we have also considered as part of this process is the expert testimony of Dr. Hensel. And there's been some conversation around socioeconomic integration throughout this process, and I just want to point you to that testimony that recognized Eagle River and Eagle River as a community of interest. The option 3B has in common with the proposed maps from November, and I'll read from the Superior Court ruling. This is another concern of mine. So it says, while the court does not make this finding lightly, it does find evidence of secretive procedures evident in the board's consideration and deliberation of the Anchorage Senate seat pairings. ... I'll skip through some of the other technical stuff, but it does say, the public portion of the record leads to only one reasonable inference, some sort of coalition or at least a tacit understanding between members Markham, Simpson, and Dinkley. All three appear to agree on all four of member Markham's maps with little public discussion. At least this time we've had public discussion. Most surprising was that at the time it is unclear in the transcript and was apparently also unclear to member Borromeo which of member Markham's maps the board had apparently reached a majority on when the deliberative discussion was ended. It seems that what the three board members had reached a majority was the only element of the map that was consistent between them, that Eagle River was split and North Eagle River was paired with Jay Bear. And I'd like to point out that if we go with option 3D, we are adopting a plan that still going back to November, where there was some intent or motive, or maybe that's not the word, that was used, evidence of secretive procedures, and we'll be basically adopting a plan drafted by Rudrick, who was found to have supplied incumbent information to two members of the board, and then apparently to the whole board through our redistricting email, but thankfully Julie redacted that information before it was distributed. And Bethany, who claimed to have not looked at that incumbent data, but was found to have actually looked at it. I have not looked at incumbent data. You mentioned, you mentioned a few Republicans opposed 3B, so therefore it must be nonpartisan. I haven't looked at incumbent data. I have no understanding what the motives of those Republicans are who have called in to testify. I'm viewing this as a statesperson's perspective, not giving more weight to any person's testimony, looking at this logically and from a matter of what abides by the Constitution, what the court found, what the court has told us to do. And if you want to go back to who was appointed by who, I mean, I think there's a reason why I was selected by the Supreme Court Justice of the state, because he probably thought that I could look at this objectively and not from a partisan perspective. I just think it's very audacious for us to actually think that Judge Matthews isn't going to sniff this out. And I know that we don't have the votes. I don't think that, again, when I said in my closing remarks in November, I was discouraged for a moment, but then I was encouraged because this was going to shine a light on the public process and that we should expect more from our elected and appointed officials. And I still feel that way. I feel like, you know, I'm not going to be deterred by this process. It is exhausting, like one of the people who testified said, but I'm not going to... My stamina is probably boundless when it comes to ensuring that justice is served and that we do the right thing. So I do hope that the courts will correct this, because apparently we can't ourselves. We're like a hung jury of some sort. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Melanie. Nicole?
Thanks. I'm going to just take a second and lower my hand here. All right. I also want to echo Melanie's thanks that the three of you have at least put some rationale on the record, which is what is required. And so let's just go back and visit a couple of them. The J-Bear thing. The military is not a protected class. This is just dog whistle politics to get people riled up that we're somehow disenfranchising the armed services. It couldn't be farther from the truth, and I say that as a Navy wife, as a daughter of a Vietnam veteran, as the granddaughter of a veteran who served in Korea. I'm sorry. J-Bear is not protected. They are not entitled to any special consideration. Also, at this stage of the game, we shouldn't even be considering socioeconomic integration in factors. Our only job at this point is to follow Article 6, Section 6. That part is over. We did that already when we did the house maps. Just pair as contiguous as practicable two districts. The two districts that are as contiguous as practicable are the two Eagle River districts. Another justification that was brought up was the public testimony. And I don't say this lightly, but a good majority of it was canned, inconsistent, and at least one case that I have personal knowledge to submitted without the knowledge of the person who submitted it supposedly, because his wife was, quote, put up to it by Jamie Aller, who's also filed to run in the district. It's just like, you can't make this stuff up. To the point that the court didn't say we had to pair Eagle River, true. What the court said is to stop gerrymandering. And here we are, back again, 2.5 weeks later, apparently not ready to quit robbing the bank of public trust, but we're brazen enough to come back in broad daylight without face masks. I don't understand. But at the same time, I'm hogtied in the back with Melanie, and we can't stop the three of you. John, you in November had a lot of trust that you were putting into Bethany Senate pairings because you didn't have familiarity with Anchorage. Now come to find out that you own a condo in Ship Creek area. It's just mind-boggling to me. The community of interest, again, with J-Bear, This is a transient community, okay? They get orders. They are not up here living in Alaska because they're necessarily doing it of free will. They are sent here by Uncle Sam. And in a lot of cases, they leave. Sometimes they do come back and retire here, and I'm thankful to have them in the community. But to have a community of interest, you have to have shared place based on experience and knowledge. And I submit to you, when you have enlisted personnel, officers that come up, do a rotation, check off their overseas box, and leave, they do not share the same experiences and knowledge. John, I can't even believe that you said that this board was not found guilty of looking at election data. It's true. Bethany was questioned about it in her deposition, said she didn't look at it. Then, lo and behold, the East Anchorage plaintiff pulled out a video of her and Bud looking at the election data that Randy sent to them. The public doesn't believe us, especially when we're caught on tape doing what we say we're not going to do. So, yes, at least two of us looked at that data. And I will tell you, the only person throughout this entire redistricting process that attempted to share incumbent data with me was Randy Ruderick. It happened in Anchorage after the hearing, and that's why I distanced myself from him. He was talking about Fairbanks North Star Borough and how we should just chop off the top because we'd be taking equal parts conservative and liberal. I told him, I don't care about the voting data. I want to break the borough boundaries at the place that makes the most constitutional sense. So it's just absolutely, I don't want to use the word crazy, but it's the only one that comes to mind. I'm sorry. And finally, John, to your point that you haven't heard any criticism regarding 3B and the voting powers, I don't know what redistricting board you've been in for the last couple of months, but it's a lot of what I've heard lately. And this process doesn't even feel Alaskan. I feel like I'm in 1950s Alabama. What are we doing here?
Okay, Melanie?
Yeah, Go ahead, Mr. Chair. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead, Melanie. You have the floor.
I just want to make one thing clear in terms of some kind of insinuation that option two would disenfranchise the military. I have the utmost respect for the military. Like Nicole, my father served in the Vietnam War, and I've got several relatives who are and have been in the military. I just don't think any group deserves special treatment at the, you know, like it's equal protection, not more voting powers for any groups. And I continue to look at splitting Eagle River and Eagle River as an attempt to provide Eagle River with two senators instead of the one that their population warrants. And I feel like there were four ways that it was presented to be done in November. The majority of the board voted on one. We were told that that's not okay. So now the actions are going to be that we've just found another way to still split Eagle River to guarantee it more representation. And that's the part that I am looking at in terms of our constitutional responsibilities and being fair. So I want to make it clear that in no way am I suggesting that we harm the military community or do something, you know, to disenfranchise them at all. That's not the perspective and lens that I'm looking at this from. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Melanie. Is there further debate on the motion? If not, we'll call for the question on the motion. Peter, could you please call the roll on the motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, yes.
And the motion is to, and could you restate the motion too, just so that we're clear?
The motion before the board is to adopt map option number 2 for Anchorage Senate pairings. Member Pinky?
Yes, because it's constitutional and complies with the court's remand, I vote yes.
Member Bromeo?
Yes, because it doesn't give Eagle River any more representation. It gives them the representation that they're due, which is one senator.
Member Markham?
Member Markham votes no on proposal 2.
Member Simpson?
No.
Member Binkley?
No.
By a vote of 2-3, the motion fails.
Okay, the chair would entertain a motion on proposed adoption for Senate hearings. Bethany?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to propose that the board adopt proposal 3B as in Bravo for Senate hearing.
Is there a second to the motion?
Mr. Chair, I'll second.
There's a motion before us and seconded to adopt pairings 3B. Is there a discussion on the motion? Bethany?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All right, in looking back at the East Anchorage lawsuits, the East Anchorage plaintiffs challenged both Senate seats K and L. And per the remand from the court, we're being asked to address Senate seat K. Senate seat L, which is now comprised of districts 23, Jay Bear, and district 24, Jay Bear, Chugiak, Peters Creek, Eagle River, was not found to be invalid. So Senate K was found to be invalid, which we're working on now, and Senate L was not found to be invalid. Both of the proposals for the pairings that we are now considering, so Proposal 2 and Proposal 3D, both of those address the Senate K issue in the same way, by pairing districts 20 with 21. And this is what the East Anchorage plaintiffs wanted. So I find it really interesting that even though the Muldoon East Anchorage issue is addressed in both proposals in a way that seems satisfactory to the East Anchorage plaintiffs, those individuals continue to be very involved in advocating for one plan over the other. Both of the plans address their issue in the same way. So why are they now so heavily investing themselves in what is essentially the business of Eagle River, Jay Bear, and Chugiak? I have to conclude that there must be some political motive. The existing pairing of District 23 and 24 plays a very important role in maintaining the community of interest of the Anchorage area military. And the best way to acknowledge that community of interest is to keep our current combination of District 23, Jay Bear, with District 24, Jay Bear, Chugiak, Eagle River, Peters Creek. So I object to the characterization that has been made by others that the military is just transient. As a 20-plus year member of the Guard and Reserve, the Military Guard and Reserve, I speak for thousands of full-time Alaska residents who serve this state and country in the Military Guard and Reserve services as full-time, long-term residents of the state, many of whom live in District 23 and 24. And in the plan that we're discussing now, Plan 3B, just as in the existing proclamation plan, there's a large amount of interplay between districts 23 and 24, both of which contain portions of Jay Bear. And then when combined, those two districts in one Senate seat create a full and complete Jay Bear Senate district. And that allows the military, which lives on base in District 23, to be combined with where much of the military and veterans live off base in District 24. During this process, we also heard a lot of testimony about the Anchorage Muni redistricting process. We heard this testimony from the public. We heard this testimony was directed specifically to South Anchorage. I took a look on Sunday at the most current assembly proposal for redistricting reapportionment, and I noticed that, lo and behold, it combines Eagle River with Jay Bear, which conforms with the concept contained in the pairings we are now discussing, 3B. I personally am very comfortable with combining districts 9 and 22, and I feel that the Chugach Mountain District that is created there makes a lot of sense, and we've heard compelling testimony that supports this that's been referenced here by other members of the board. I'd also like to state on the record that contrary to what has been claimed here, I absolutely did not read incumbent data that was emailed to all members of the board. I did not then, and I do not now care about incumbents. That is not our role, and I take that seriously. Just because there is a legitimate difference of opinion does not make me or any other member of the board a gerrymander, and I won't be pressured to try to change my very reasonable views just because people want to call me names. So I firmly reject and also object to attempts to characterize me in that way. With that, I'd like to explain why I support each of the pairings and districts, each of the pairings that are in 3B, the 3B proposal. So I'd like to start with the response to the court's ruling on Senate K. So the natural response to that pairing is what was laid out in both Proposal 2 and Proposal 3B, by creating a Muldoon Road District. And this is a road district that combines into the Senate House District 20 plus 21. And that Muldoon Road District has a very wide mix of infrastructure. It's got zero lot lines and single family homes, mobile home parks. It's got plenty of big box stores, small businesses. And it joins the residential neighborhoods that are now along the major east-west transportation boundary of DeBar Road. When we put 20 and 21 together, what we have is 22 that's now left with no partner. So it needs a new pairing. And so the natural pairing for 22 is District 9, which is another of the Anchorage Chugach Mountain districts. We've heard it said here on the record, as well as during public testimony, that there's over 30 miles of contiguity. Residents have their own road services that are separate from Uni services. Also, as far as geography, it includes Ship Creek, which is in the east part of District 22, that winds itself through both districts to the Ship Creek drainage in District 9 near Bird Creek. So that now leaves District 10 without a partner. So being able to put District 10 with District 13 creates a new pairing that unites neighborhoods along the three major north-south transportation arteries, which travel the length of both districts. So you have the old Seward Highway, you have C Street, and you have Minnesota. That leaves District 14 stranded. So that's going to require a new pairing. And that allows us to take the two primary Midtown roads that travel east to west, Northern Lights and 36th Avenue, and allows those to be combined into one Senate pairing. Both of those districts have very similar commercial infrastructure. They've got lots of hospital and medical buildings, high-rise offices. And so with that, then you've got the four remaining districts, which are as they exist now in our proclamation plan, that don't require any changes. You've got 23-24, which is Daybear, and then Chugach Peters Creek. There's also some geography that ties those together in addition to the military connections we've talked about. Both of those districts have very long boundaries along the Kinnick Arm Waterway. 17 and 18, again, the same as in our current proclamation plan. And that pairing unites those two districts that are around the Merrill Field infrastructure. Districts 11 and 12, again, no changes, the same as in our proclamation plan. And so you've got the shared boundary of Abbott Road that allows those two to be united. You've got lots of parks, green belts in that area. And then districts 15 and 16, again, the same as in our current plan. This is largely a Cook Inlet coastal district. So again, four changes that result from responding to the court's ruling to make a change to District K, but then four districts that remain the same. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And we had Melanie and then Nicole.
Just a second, Mr. Chair. I'm not a East Anchorage plaintiff, but I heard you ask why are they still so involved, Bethany. I can tell you why I'm still so concerned about this matter of splitting Eagle River. Although it's a great step forward to pair Muldoon with Muldoon, as we were told to correct Senate District K, I don't think continuing to give Eagle River more representation by simply splitting it in another direction is what's fair and what's right. So at least for me, that's why I continue to pursue this matter of not splitting communities of interest in an effort to give them more representation than they are due. The most natural pairings in my mind would have been Eagle River and Eagle River and Muldoon and Muldoon. I do consider it a step forward in the right direction that we are at least pairing Muldoon with Muldoon. But had we had a chance to discuss and deliberate the map that I had proposed in November, which option one, which I voted to remove because I recognize that the court directed us to only fix a certain part of the Anchorage map. But had we had that chance, I don't think we'd be arguing that Jay Bear and Eagle River is a great pairing comparatively to the map that I had presented in November. I think what we're stuck with is narrow direction from the court to fix one portion of the map and not present the best possible map. So I still don't think that the best possible map is even one of the two options right now, but we're limited, and I recognize that. I respect the court. I respect their directives, and I respect the Constitution. So that's if you're asking me if I'm doing this for partisan purposes, I am not. Just because Muldoon and Muldoon are not rightfully paired, why am I continuing to pursue this? Because the same outcome is happening here. The stated purpose of splitting Eagle River was to give it more representation, and our end outcome is still going to do that.
Hey, Nicole?
Thank you. It's been asked by Bethany. Sorry, Bethany started off that last round with, haven't the East Anchorage plaintiffs got what they wanted? No, they haven't got what they wanted. They wanted us to stop gerrymandering and give Alaska a fair map. We haven't done that. So I submit to the board that the East Anchorage plaintiffs are far from getting what they wanted. The assertion, too, that they're all of a sudden heavily investing themselves all of a sudden, Bethany, this is from, I don't know if you can see that date, August 13th, 2001, the list of testifiers on here, Yara Silvers, testifying as an individual, but she also was a member of the Scenic Hills Community Council. She did not want East Anchorage combined with South Anchorage and East Anchorage vote diluted. Who testified after her? Major Felicia Wilson. Same thing. So no, they didn't just pop out of thin air all of a sudden. They've been here from the beginning, and I guarantee you they're going to be here until the end. So we better get used to it. Bethany, please stop saying you didn't look at incumbent data. You were already asked about this in deposition. You were found to be untruthful in the deposition. It is on page 56 of the Matthews opinion. Randy Reuters emailed the board at its designated email address as well as directly to members Markham and Simpson separately, incumbent information for each of the House districts. Member Markham testified that while she had access to incumbent information provided to the board by Ruderick, she, quote, didn't bother looking at the incumbent information, unquote, and explained that such information was, quote, irrelevant to the process that we were tasked with, and it just muddied the water. She went on to say when she was looking at the data presented in the deposition that she could, quote, honestly say that this was the first time that I have ever looked at the names that are on the document, unquote. However, Markham also admitted that she went to her computer to pull up the unredacted versions of the incumbent information when speaking with Member Simpson. So just because you say you did doesn't mean it's true, especially when you're caught on video. So thank goodness that we had that owl in the room. I appreciate, Bethany, that you have been under a lot of public scrutiny, but the assertion that we're calling you names is absolutely false. I have called you a gerrymanderer, and if you want me to stop calling you a gerrymanderer, then by all means, stop gerrymandering. That's how this will work. The other assertion that you made here that 22 has no natural partner, the natural partner to 22 is 24. Look to the north. Quit trying to poach the Anchorage districts for Eagle River to get Eagle River more power in the Senate. The jig is up. We see what you're doing. All of Alaska sees what the members of the majority are about at this point. And again, I'm going to strongly encourage the court to exercise its Article 6, Section 11 powers and then just draw the map itself. And I will say as a final point in this round, too, that if Alaskans want the court to quit drawing the boundaries, then they need to make sure that the board is following the Constitution so the court doesn't have to. Our job is so simple. Ignore the socioeconomic integration stuff at this point. Just pair the two that are most practicable. Okay? That's Eagle River. Eagle River all day long is the most natural pairing for itself. Thank you.
I just want to clarify something. I think I heard you, Nicole, that maybe I was wrong, that you said that Bethany had perjured herself, that she had lied in the before the court. Is that, did I misunderstand that?
You did. You're putting the word perjury in my mouth. I never said that. I did say she lied because she did. She was deposed. She said she didn't have incumbent data. She never looked at it. And then lo and behold, the East Anchorage plaintiff brought up a video recording. All of this is public knowledge. I'm not making this stuff up. So I see the reaction here that you guys are sort of like bewildered, like I might be making it up. I'm not. Dig it up. It's out there. It's in the record. We can watch it over and over again, just like we can watch her when she said she was splitting Eagle River to get Eagle River more representation. And, you know, this dumpster fire could have been put out a long time ago by many different people. I don't know why it's not. I don't understand why we continue to go back and just frustrate the purpose of the Constitution. We said in the beginning as a group of five that we wanted a fair map that we could be proud of that wouldn't get us sued. When did that change? When I'm asking you guys, when did it change? No answer.
Never changed for me, if that's a question to me. Still is. I mean, I respect your opinion is different. We all have different opinions. We come at this differently, but that's my objective as well. Further debate on the motion?
I have a question, John, then. Is it your position that we should wrap up our work before the June 1 filing deadline?
My position is there's a motion before us, and we should, if there's no more debate on the motion, vote on the motion. Is there further debate on the motion?
Yes, I'm still talking. Thank you.
I'll call a question.
And the reason I'm asking that is because you were overheard on November 10th saying that it's going to be, quote, incredibly difficult for the court to change anything before the June 1 filing deadline.
I don't know, overheard, I don't know what you're talking about, but it's irrelevant. You have something.
It's not irrelevant. We can check your phone records
to figure out
who you were talking
to
November 10th.
We could go on all day about who said what or who thought they overheard somebody. There's a motion before us. If there's no further debate on the motion, I think we should vote on the motion. Peter, could you call the roll, please?
So the motion before the board is
to adopt the motion, to be clear.
Thank you. The motion before the board is to adopt Anchorage Senate Pairings Option 3B, 3 Bravo. And I'll call the roll now. Member Benke?
No.
Member Bromeo?
No, it's still a partisan gerrymander if we give Eagle River more power.
Member Markham?
Member Markham votes yes in support of Option 3B.
Member Simpson?
Yes.
Member Binkley?
Yes.
By a vote of 3-2, the motion carries.
Okay, on the agenda next is the potential adoption of revised proclamation. And I believe that, Peter, between you and Eric, the demographer, and council, you've drafted a couple different proclamations in anticipation of either passing option 2 or passing option 3B. Do I have that correct?
We have a single proclamation. We did model the different Senate truncation scenarios and able to inform the board about that if that's the board's desire.
Okay, so the proclamation, let's see. Oh, that's the process report. Okay, so the proclamation, amended proclamation of redistricting, would just include then that we had passed option 3B?
So the proclamation will include new meets and bounds to fix the Cantwell, as well as new maps which reflect the adopted Senate pairings. The proclamation itself doesn't say option this or option that, but that will be reflected in the maps and in the Senate truncation table and the Senate core constituency report. So the new language to the proclamation is shown in highlighting. All the material above it here is the same as our original proclamation, but Working with our legal team, we added an additional whereas that just talks about the court decisions and directions. And then there's, of course, a new date that's just highlighted there. I didn't know what day, so we'll fill that in. And then there's a Senate label difference between option 2 and option 3B. We have to correct that. And then the signature page. So it's just a very modestly changed proclamation. And I would defer to legal counsel if he wants to, you know, recommend any specific process, whether we can adopt this now or after I correct a few of these little things.
Matt, do you want to weigh in on this, please?
Mr. Chair, I would recommend that Peter finalize the proclamation, then circulate it for the board to approve, and then the board will need to sign. The Alaska law allows electronic signature, so I understand some members are remote, so it could be signed electronically. I think we need to be clear with the public as to the date on which the proclamation is adopted, whether that could be today or tomorrow. It should be as soon as practicable. But the date of the proclamation is important for anyone who's interested in a legal challenge to start calendaring that. And then I want to be able to report to the court as to what we've done. So I would encourage Peter, if we could, maybe we could stand a recess. We could finalize the document and put it up on the screen or email it around. And then the board, if interested, could vote to adopt the proclamation. And Peter, maybe if you're prepared to discuss the truncation issue, we could do that before we finalize the document.
Yes,
I think that's go ahead, Peter.
I was going to say, through the chair, I do have, because we were limited to two options, I was able to work with Eric at the Department of Labor to run the Senate truncation report for both options, to have that available, and I'm prepared to discuss that today in detail, whatever detail the board would like. The net result is that in either option, there were no changes to the truncation in terms of, you know, the population differences were such that there were no seats that didn't have to run that had run before and vice versa. So it's the same outcome, but we do have some different percentages that can go into at the board's pleasure, or a recess may be in order to prepare the proclamation.
Well, I would suggest that we do take a recess, and I think we got a couple members with hands up, and we'll go to them, but I think that's a sound advice to take a brief recess and to have that drawn up. Melanie, and then Nicole?
Yeah, I prefer to say what I have to say before we go to recess, because it will affect the signature page. I'd like to request that we have a signature page that notes those signing in opposition. It's important for me to sign this in person. I don't want to sign it electronically. I was nearly erased from the process or the proclamation in November. I'm hoping that initial signature page that I signed in opposition has been retained, that the second one is retained, and then I'd like my actual signature noted in opposition on this one. So it'd be great if we could move that forward today if possible. I also, in terms of records retention, again, I'm going to ask that we keep the portal open for people to provide public testimony. I think that was a mistake the first time around after we thought that we were done with this proclamation. I think we would have received a lot of public comment after the first go around had we kept that portal open. So those are a couple of my requests. I don't want to have to be filing some kind of a minority report or anything like that. So I'd like a signature page noting my opposition.
I believe that's very appropriate, Melanie, and we can instruct Peter to make certain that on the signature page, any opposition can be noted by members who did not support the proclamation. And I think if we can get it prepared, then, Melanie, you can sign it in ink there and put whatever notations you would like on there you feel appropriate, and it will be retained. That will be the permanent record. Nicole?
Thanks. I was going to make the same two requests that Melanie did for the signature block and also for the opening or the public testimony portal on our webpage to remain open. But I want to make an observation there because we've had a lot of conversations about as practicable for contiguity sake of the Senate, and our counsel here says we should hurry up and get this signed as quickly as practicable, and we could use electronic signatures to do that. Efficiency. So, again, traveling between the two districts that are now paired, the District 29 and 22, just because you can walk a signature over doesn't mean that you shouldn't drive a signature over if you had to. But that would, of course, require going through five or six House districts, and that would run afoul to Kenai. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bethany?
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to go on record as saying that as a person who is carefully likes to steward government funds, and we are being paid by government funds in terms of all of our transportation costs, in terms of staff and personnel costs, that I appreciate the consideration of the board as far as doing the proclamation signatures electronically rather than requiring the high price of gas to be paid right now to drive. Certainly, if folks prefer doing it that way, that's fine, but I will be more than happy to sign electronically to save some money. Thank you.
Melanie?
Mr. Chair, I wasn't trying to suggest that everybody have to sign it in person. I would prefer to sign it in person, but I'm not imposing that. I'm not suggesting that we impose that on all members.
Thank you. Why don't we take a brief at ease, come back at 3 o'clock. Is that enough time, Peter, to get that finalized?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we'll stand at recess until 3 o'clock. We're in recess. Just for members of the public and board members as well, Peter and Matt are still working on that. They're going to need a few more minutes, they said. So let's plan on coming back at 3:05, and then hopefully they've got it prepared by then. Thank you. Okay. I don't know if Peter is done yet. Peter and Matt, are you done? If so, we'll come back to order.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we have a printed version of the proclamation that's been reviewed by our legal team, and members have had it on their desk. This is, with the exception of two little grammatical errors, this is the same document that I emailed out in draft form earlier today. So members who are virtual can reference that, and you'll have the substance of all of the changes, which primarily occurs in the final whereas clause. That's the new material. Everything else is essentially the same. And then there's a new signature page, of course, in the back.
Okay. I've got a hard copy of that here. I guess I would propose if we're going to all sign it today, we use today's date. I know the members locally there are expressing an interest in signing it there. I can certainly sign it electronically today. I don't know about Bethany or Bud. Are you okay with signing this today?
I am. Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I certainly am.
Okay. So why don't we use today's date then as the date, and then we can, those of us not in the office can do it electronically, and those members in the room can sign it in person. Peter?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. At the will of the board, it would be appropriate for us to present the revised map with the House numberings to match the pairings, then to talk about the truncation, and then to talk about the Senate terms table to be sure that members are all up to speed and in agreement with that process. So I'm prepared to do that at the board's pleasure.
Okay, that makes sense. Melanie?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's, I think, an amendment that needs to be made on the 8th, whereas 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, it says, whereas the Alaska Redistricting Board adopted this final plan and proclamation of redistricting today, November 10, 2021, in conformity with the constitutional requirement that it do so within 90 days. So it's confusing to me. It should say that we had adopted a plan.
Peter, let's write adopted the 2021 final plan and proclamation.
Yeah, that's correct. It should be in the past tense.
And then we should delete, instead of today, it should say on November 10th, 2021.
And since it wasn't final, what do we refer to it as?
Again, we're going to call it the board adopted its 2021 plan and proclamation of redistricting on November 10th.
Let me just bring that up so see what we're talking about.
Then, Mr. Chair, I would encourage after the discussion of the items that Mr. Torkelson suggested that it would be appropriate for there to be a motion to adopt the amended proclamation of redistricting as of today's date. That I would encourage that be done.
You know, Matt, you're cutting out. At least for me, I can't.
Oh, sorry, John. I was suggesting that after Mr. Torkelson presents the items he's intending to present, that it would be appropriate to entertain a motion to adopt the amended proclamation of redistricting as of today's date.
Okay, that's logical. Peter, you've got your hand up to that issue?
No, I'm sorry. I neglected to lower my hand. Thanks.
Okay, Melanie?
Oh, I'm sorry. Same thing.
Oh, okay. And by the way, good catch on that, Melanie.
I try to be vigilant.
So maybe, Peter, you could walk us through that in terms of the truncation and pairings. But before that, I see Nicole's got her hand up. Nicole?
Thank you. I want to draw the board's attention to yet more caution from Judge Matthews, which is that last November we had no debate on Senate pairings, and then it came out and adopted Senate pairings without having the opportunity for the public to respond to what the board was going to do. I don't see how we've changed course, unfortunately, in the new year. I thought we would turn a new page, but here we are yet again, this time, though, taking public testimony, but adopting a plan without giving the public a chance to respond to it. I understand that we had two options, but we did not signal to the public which option we were going to go with as the majority. And I don't think that we should sign this today. I think we should leave it out for public comment tomorrow. Maybe someone will change their mind and we can vote on the plan tomorrow.
Bethany?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to hear from legal counsel regarding the concept that was just presented, if I could.
Mr. Chair, I don't believe that. Mr. Chair, would you like me to answer that question?
Yeah, please, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't believe the Constitution requires the board to do more public hearings after it makes a final decision. I think the court was concerned that the Senate discussion in November was rushed. And so to remedy that, the board met on April 2nd, heard public testimony. It, the next meeting, it adopted a process for hearing from the public and accepting public plans. It's had 7 hearings on the options that were presented by the public, and at some point the board has to make a decision. I think we have to balance the public process that's contemplated under the Constitution with the limited time that's available in light of statutory deadlines. So certainly if the board wants to entertain more testimony, but I don't believe it's constitutionally required. I don't think that the judge was saying after you issue a final decision in every instance, you need to have another round of testimony. I think the concern was that in November, the plan adopted by the board had really never been fully, you know, articulated and presented in the way that the court would have liked to see. So the difference here is that there are hundreds of public comments on option 2 and option 3B that helped to inform the board today.
Mr. Chair, you're muted. I saw you just tried to say something, but you were muted.
I apologize. Bud, and then Nicole.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I agree with Matt as far as taking more public testimony on this. We are leaving the portal open for people to comment if they want to. They're free to do that, and I'm sure they will. My further question for Matt has to do with the truncation and the election, re-election timing, whatever that's called. Do we need to take testimony on those issues? And if so, we could roll that over to tomorrow. But I'm not sure we do. It may just be ministerial. So just looking for advice on that one.
Well, I really think it's ministerial.
Matt?
I mean,
go ahead, and if you could just speak right into the microphone instead of turning your head, that would be helpful.
The board previously adopted a cutoff point, that is to determine whether changes in district populations were sufficiently great as to require a candidate or the incumbent to rerun. And I don't think that decision needs to be revisited. It's been made. Peter can remind me the exact number. It was 16% then.
16.3%
was the number that the board used as a cutoff. So I don't think there's a need to revisit that decision. It was made. It was part of the proclamation plan. It was not challenged. And so I don't see this as the board making any additional really changes to the proclamation that would require further testimony. So if the board wanted to invite it, certainly could. And but it's what I would encourage is maybe have Peter present it to you, see what it looks like, and then the board can decide how it wishes to proceed.
Okay, Nicole, did you have your hand up, or is it?
Yeah, I just want to reiterate that my batting average for the course are a little bit better than you guys, and I think that we should let this soak, let it set, let the public comment on what we're about to do. Thank you.
Okay, Bethany?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a question. I guess I'm a little confused. What we're talking about is whether or not we're entertaining the idea of changing our cutoff percentage. That's part of what we're discussing here, whether or not we would consider doing that. I guess I just assumed we would go with the same cutoff percentage and you know, everything kind of the same as with the previous proclamation. But is that part of what we're being discussed here?
I think that's part of the truncation process is that number. We could choose a different number if there was some rationale for it. I don't think it was controversial. I think it was, I can't even remember how we came up with the number, but I don't know that anybody is anybody proposing to change that truncation number, the 16.3%? I don't think so. Maybe what we could do, Nicole, did you have a question on that?
Yeah, I don't understand if you guys have data that I don't, but I don't even have printouts of what the makeup of the new districts are. So I would like to at least see some data before we act on it. I think that would be prudent of the board.
I have it.
I think we were just about to get to that. Peter was going to present that to us. So maybe let's just have Peter make that presentation to us, and then we can decide how to proceed. Melanie, do you have a question on that before Peter makes that presentation?
No, not a question, but I think Bethany was confused about what we're talking about taking public testimony on. My understanding from Nicole was the Senate pairings, not the truncation, but can you please clarify that, Member Romeo?
Yeah, I would like to not necessarily hold public hearings again, but leave the portal open for the opportunity for Alaskans to weigh in, and if the board is amenable to hearing some public testimony before we adopt tomorrow's plan, I'm always down for more public testimony after the board takes final action. I did see the numbers. That's what I'm talking about, like the letter numbers.
Let's go ahead and let Peter make this presentation, and then we can debate it and talk about how to proceed after that. Peter?
So, Mr. Chairman, so in order to effect a new set of Senate pairings and stay with the tradition of having sequentially numeric districts to reflect the letters that are associated with the Senate pairings, some numbers would have to change in Anchorage in order to accomplish that. So this is obviously at the board's discretion how they want to do that, but to model it, to see what would happen, this is a numbering scheme where 9 stays the same, and then to be paired with the old 22 becomes 10, so it's 9-10. Following what I heard the board articulate, which is keep as much the same as you could, 11 and 12 stay the same. The old 10 becomes 13 to pair with 14. 15 and 16 stay the same. 17 and 18 are together. 19 and 20 are together, same pairing as before, but with the numbers shifted, and then 21 and 22 together in Muldoon, 23 and 24, not shown here, 24 is Chubiak, stay together as they are now. So this changes not even eight districts. Seven districts are renumbered, well, more than that, but there were seven that had to change because of the new pairings, and then the others adjusted for it. So these numbers then lead to the table, which I'll bring up next, the Senate terms table that I had Eric run. If you want different numbers, we can number it differently and run it again. The overall statistics won't change because we're not changing the underlying House geography. Because the House shapes didn't change, the numbers on the terms table, which I'll bring up next, just shuffle around. They don't actually move very much, and the net result is that there's no new truncation decisions. Nobody would have to run who didn't have to run before, and vice versa. So let me switch screens now. It's going to take me just a second to pull up the new table that those numbers would then feed into. So let's share this screen here. So this is the report. Make sure everybody can see it. This is the report that Mr. Sandberg ran.
Can you enlarge that?
Yeah, it is very detailed. I'll zoom in a sec. Just, this is a very similar table to what the same calculus was run as we did in November. And what you're looking at is option three across the top and the 2013 districts running vertically on the left-hand side. And then these numbers are populations of voters who are retained in a various district. So just this cell I clicked on, I'll zoom in so that you can see it better. So to demonstrate so that everyone understands, this is for map option 3B. The new Senate District I, for example, takes 23,000 people and change from the old Senate District I, and then just to make the point, it takes 206 people from the old Senate District J. So that's how the math is done. It's called a cross-tab report. And then Mr. Sandberg took those numbers and then converted those into percentages. This is the percentage of the old District I that's retained by the new District I, 64%. What that means is if you subtract that number from 100, that's the percentage of overall voter change. So it's 25 plus all of these numbers. That in that case would be 35.8% total voter change in Senate District I. Because the board chose 16.3% as a cutoff in November, the new Senate District I must stand for election in 2022. To take all these numbers and summarize them into a more human compatible table, we have this table, which is very similar to the one, just make sure it's showing here, very similar to the one that we did in November, and it highlights all of the different Senate seats from A to B at the A through T in this column using the numbering sequence we have from November and slightly modified to reflect the changes necessary for option 3B. Any place there's been a change, I've highlighted the cell. So if you have the table from the last cycle, which we can bring up, you'll see that some of these percentages have changed, some of them very little, some have shifted. But the net result is that 19 senators had to run again. The same 19 senators have to run again after this action today, has had that run again in November. There's no net change in who runs again. There's shuffling. And you'll notice right here in Senate J, there's our cutoff point, 16.3%. So even because we didn't change the House geography, that number reemerges, even though it might be in a slightly different row this time because of numbering changes. So that's this is the table. And then the other thing that you'll notice is Senate CO changed, as well as Senate CR. Those are impacts from the Cantwell revision. Now, the percentage, the old percentage here, for example, was 60.9 from memory, so it's like a 2% change. But I highlighted those because those did actually change in terms of their retained voter core percentage, but there's no actual functional change. They both have to run again because they're well over the 16.3 cutoff. So I'd be happy to answer questions. I know this is a technical topic.
Yeah. Melanie, go ahead.
I don't have any recommended changes to the 16.3%, but I did just realize that our agenda for today and tomorrow noticed public comment, and we did earlier state on the record that we would take public comment after we made a decision. So I thought I'd point that out to you as our chairman, what we had noticed the public of.
Yeah, I noticed the agenda that we adopted does not have public testimony on it. My understanding was that we were going to make a final decision. At some point, we make a final decision, and that is the final decision. If we want to drag this out, I shouldn't say drag it out, but if we want to extend this and extend public comment on what members have indicated that they might be supporting, and I guess we have already made a decision on supporting option 3B. I'm not certain that public testimony is going to change that. So I'm not sure the purpose of it.
Mr. Chair,
it would just, in my opinion, serve to slow down the process.
May I respond?
Yeah, go ahead, and then we'll go to Bethany.
The top of the agenda said public testimony at the LIO. It wasn't in the agenda in terms of an agenda item, but it does say public testimony and a number. And I do recall that we said we would make, you know, take a vote on Senate pairings, then take public testimony, and then adopt a proclamation. I thought that was the plan.
Yeah, that wasn't my understanding. I think this is a standard form, the port at the top. Peter, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that the LIO puts out.
Okay, well, somebody has put in the chat, the board went on record earlier that they would allow public comment once a decision was made. So I don't have the minutes in front of me, but apparently we did, supposedly.
Thank you. Peter, are you available?
Yes, I just checked. It does say public testimony at the top of our agenda. It was a standard form that I neglected to remove the notice.
Okay, but I think that was, it may indicate that that's prior to the agenda or would be on someplace on the agenda. So it really is in conflict with the agenda. But I think there is the opportunity, if we're going to leave the portal open for the public to comment, not just today or tomorrow, but ongoing. Nicole?
Where are we with my suggestion that we put off adopting the plan until tomorrow and allow for the public to react to the final decision of the board today?
Well, the public would, if this is the final decision of the board, the public has not only tomorrow, but, you know, for quite a number of days to react to what the final decision is. The final decision is the final decision. That's the way I read it.
I don't understand your math here because a status report is due in 2 days, so they don't have a great number of days, and we have to tell the court what we've done. What is the harm in not signing the final plan today and signaling to the public that the three-member majority has approved MAP 3B and that we're going to hold public testimony as we said we would at the beginning and print it in the agenda?
Bethany?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It sounds like maybe what members are asking for is a motion to reconsider, and I would be happy to entertain that. I mean, I'm sure that we'd be willing to vote on that if they would like to make a motion to reconsider. We can certainly do that. There's nothing stopping us from doing that at this time. Thank you.
Is that, Nicole, is that what you're suggesting? Melanie, I think you've got your hand up. Go ahead.
I don't, oh, sorry.
I'm not suggesting a motion to reconsider at this point. I think that would just be an exercise in futility. I am suggesting that we follow what we told the public that we would do. We would make the Senate pairing decision, take public testimony, and then adopt the proclamation. I might be mistaken. My memory's not always 100%, but I thought that was what we, when we adopted a process and dates, I thought that's why we had set aside 2 days for this, and I thought that we had said that we would take public testimony after adopting Senate pairings. Do other members have a different recollection? And Peter, are the minutes done from that day when we adopted a process?
Mr. Chair, would you like an answer to that?
Yeah, if you could respond, Peter.
The minutes are in process, but the audio recording and video recordings are on the website. But I don't have a summary of the minutes. The contractor is working on those.
Okay, thanks. Bud?
Mr. Chair, I don't have a recollection one way or the other whether we said we would take additional public testimony or not. It concerns me that it is printed on the top of our agenda that we would do that, but again, it's in conflict because it's not an actual agenda item that we voted on. So, you know, I don't want to give the appearance that we're not interested in what the public has to say. I thought maybe it was a good compromise to simply leave the portal open so that anybody with further comments is free to make those, the way it's been available all along. We keep that open till tomorrow, and have that opportunity available.
Nicole and then Bethany.
Thanks. We did say that we were going to allow the public to react to our final decision. And for us to be disingenuous and fall back on Peter, who is our only staff member at this point and is doing the job of five people, it's just a cop-out. Let's give the public time to react to what's been done today, to meaningfully respond. We didn't have to wait this long to adopt a final plan. The Supreme Court issued its decision March 25th. That next Monday, I was saying, let's go, let's meet, let's do this. We burned an entire week off the clock, so it's not the public's fault that the board refused to meet. That's on us. Let them react to the plan.
Okay, Bethany?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I would like to hear from legal counsel regarding the publication that was put out by the LIO that showed public testimony versus the agenda that we adopted. It doesn't include public testimony. Thank you.
I think the key is that the board followed the process contemplated by the Constitution, and generally that process under Section 10 is for the board to adopt a proposed plan, then hold public hearings on the proposed plan, and then adopt the final plan. And so that's the process that the board has been undertaking. There's no harm in hearing additional testimony, but at some point the board has to make a final decision, and it's also not, it's a waste of public. If the board has made a final, has made up its mind and has voted and has a final decision, delaying the proclamation is also potentially concerning to the court. I think we need to wrap it up and report back to the court that the board's work on remand has been completed.
Okay, thank you, Matt. Nicole, further comment?
Yeah, responding to Matt, the word that you just used there is plan, and that we should adopt the final plan and hold public hearing on the final plan. Up until moments ago, we haven't had a final plan. We've had two options. So I want to make litigation as swift as possible, as inexpensive as possible, and
to comply with the spirit in which the last order was issued, that we not just take lip service from the public, but we give them an opportunity to react to our actions, and perhaps one of us will change his mind and adopt MAP 2.
Matt, is that what the court said, to give the public an opportunity to react to our final plan?
I don't see that in the Superior Court's decision, and I don't see that in the Constitution. So I believe that by adopting options 2 and 3B, publishing those to the website, and having 7 days of hearings on proposed, on alternative solutions to the court's remand, that the board complied with the process anticipated or contemplated under Section 10 of Article 6 of the state constitution. So the idea is to propose solutions, but then make sure the public gets an opportunity to provide its input. Then the board needs to come back and consider that public testimony and explain its reasons. That's what happened today, and the board needs to take action. So I believe the board has complied with the Constitution. Again, if the board's preference is to invite another day of written and or spoken testimony, the Constitution doesn't preclude that, but I don't believe that the judge, certainly not, there's nothing in the remand order with regard to process. Again, going back to the judge's criticism of what occurred in November, you know, I think all of us realize in retrospect it would have been, we maybe spent too much time on the public roadshow and not enough time at the end of the process to make all of the different decisions that had to be made. And so that process was rushed, and that was the judge's concern. So the issue here is, you know, did the public know that the board was considering option 2 and option 3B, and did the public have an opportunity to express its views to the board so the board could take that testimony, those views, into consideration before making a decision? So that would be the concern of the court. So I'm comfortable that, again, that the board has complied with the Constitution, and that's my conclusion.
Okay, thank you. Bethany, and then Nicole.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I would just like for us to consider what the goal would be of further public testimony. We have voted. We have a final vote. I've asked if anyone wants to offer a motion for reconsideration, and no one does. So if we're not reconsidering, you know, our vote, then it is a final vote. And I feel like, to some degree, we would be misleading the public by letting them testify to us in person about a vote that's final. I think it's, you know, there's no harm in letting them continue to provide online written testimony. Peter could continue to compile that and send that to us. We could continue to read that. But I guess I feel a little bit like we might be misleading the public if no one wants to offer a motion for reconsideration and we're saying that this is the final vote. Then what is the goal of continuing to let people testify on a vote that is 100% final? Thank you.
And Nicole, and then Bud.
So, I'll have to unpack there, Bethany. Seeing as you and Bud made the motion to pass D3, the motion would have to come from you or Bud to reconsider. So there's nothing that Melanie and I can do procedurally to get you to reconsider MAP D3. Now, if you and Bud want to make a motion to reconsider B3, then I'm here for it all day long. The purpose of holding public testimony is allow the public to react to the final plan. Again, the final plan, not one of two options that the board could have adopted, and it also squares with what we told them we were going to do. I'm very concerned here with legal counsel's interpretation of the Constitution, because last time around we were also told that pairing South Muldoon with Eagle River was perfectly permissible under the Constitution as well. So keep that in mind.
Okay, Bud?
I think we need to bring closure to all of this. I think we should keep the portal open to give people that want to comment on the final plan an opportunity to make their opinion known, but I'm not inclined to seek reconsideration or delay it further.
Okay. Short of a motion to some extent or another, I don't see a consensus to extend, adopt or reconsider our adopting the final plan or of holding in-person public testimony on the plan we just adopted. I agree with Bud on the fact that there's an opportunity for the public to react. I think, Nicole, as you put it, to what the final plan is, and I'm sure we'll hear that, you know, and through the portal and other methods that the public will seek to inform us about and what their opinion is, and there could be litigation as well going forward, and that'll be an opportunity, of course, to hear what those concerns are. I think the quicker, as you pointed out, Nicole, the quicker we can get this to the court so that they can review it, the better. And being consistent with that, I think we need to have the final plan done today and move forward. There still is the truncation before us. Were there any other questions on that, the 16.3%, or how Peter had laid that out? Bethany?
And Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to say thank you to both Peter and Eric. They had a lot of foresight in going ahead and running all of this for both of the proposals that we have out there so that we have everything ready and were able to see this information thoroughly during today's meeting. So I appreciate that. I approve of what they've done. I think it was, like I said, very good that they did this for both plans so that we had this out there. And I'm definitely in support of the work that they've done in this effort. Thank you.
Matt, would we need a motion to adopt that, that matrix that Peter had presented?
It's incorporated in the proclamation, in the revised or amended proclamation of redistricting. So I think if the board is satisfied with all of the information contained therein, that the motion would be to adopt and execute the amended proclamation of redistricting as of April 13th, 2022.
Bethany and then Nicole.
And Mr. Chairman, I move that the board adopt the amended proclamation of redistricting as of April 13th, 2022.
Okay, there's a motion before us. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, a motion before us and seconded to adopt the amended proclamation. Nicole?
I don't understand what we're doing here. The only map I have in front of me is a renumbered map of Anchorage. Where is the map that has the new Senate district letters on it?
Through the chair?
Yeah, Peter, go ahead.
Yeah, so the one you're thinking about, the PDF maps, Eric will produce those tomorrow, and they'll be attached to the proclamation as an expression of the board's new plan. So the Autobound doesn't let me put letters next to the numbers, so I don't have a way to do that. But they're sequential and in order. So
well, can I have 5 minutes then to bust out a Sharpie and draw all over the November proclamation and try and figure out what letters match up with the numbers?
That's fine with me. Is there any objection to taking a five-minute break? Okay, let's come back. It's 3:44. Let's come back at 3:50. We'll stand in recess. Okay, let's go ahead and call the meeting back to order. Nicole, have you had a chance to look over that and draw the connections between those house districts?
I have. Thank you very much. I think it's important that we review information before voting on it, so I appreciate the at ease to allow me to do that.
Okay, we still have a motion before us to adopt the revised plan. Further discussion on the motion? Why don't we have a roll call vote, if we could, please, Peter?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, stand by. The motion before the board is to adopt the 2022 proclamation as proposed. Member Banky?
Yes, I thought we had 5 minutes. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be absent for this part of the conversation. Peter, I see you've got new numbered maps, but no letters on them.
Okay.
And did you compare them against what's in the proclamation to make sure it's correct?
Yeah, we just looked at them.
Okay. My vote is no, Mr. Chairman.
Member Bromio?
My vote is also no. I'm concerned about the splitting of Eagle River. It still seems like a naked partisan gerrymander to me. I'm sorry, but I can't vote in favor of this.
Member Markham?
Yes.
Member Binkley?
I think you forgot Member Simpson.
I did. I'm going to come back to him. Member Simpson?
He's going to sleep on it tonight. Just kidding.
I vote yes.
And Member Binkley?
Yes.
By a vote of 3-2, the motion carries.
Okay, it looks like we've adopted our final plan, the revised proclamation of 2022. Is there any further business to come before the board? Melanie?
I don't have further business, but I'd like to offer some closing remarks when it's the appropriate time, please.
Certainly, and this would be the time to do that.
All right. Well, I just want to apologize to Alaskans again, because I don't think that we passed Senate pairings that comply with what the court directed us to do. We still split Eagle River to give it more representation, and I hope that the courts move swiftly so that Alaskans can have an election under fair maps. And I just want to thank everyone again who provided us with input and public testimony. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Melanie. Any further closing comments from board members? Nicole?
A question. So is tomorrow's agenda no more? That we don't need to meet anymore? I'm a little bit confused about the public notices that have gone out.
That's correct. We've concluded our business, and we would not be meeting tomorrow.
Okay. In that case, I do have some closing remarks. And going to begin by once again thanking Alaskans for engaging in the process. It has been extremely rewarding to be in your communities. I was in 23 of the 26 public hearings that were held across the state, and my experience there and the board's collective experience led to us adopting a very fair house map that I'm proud of, that I believe is going to serve as a benchmark for future redistricting boards to achieve as they move forward. The next message is, excuse me one second. The next message, I'm sorry, is from my son, Kellen, because the first time that he votes, it's going to be under maps that his mom drew. So, Kellen, when you watch this later and you listen to it, I want you to know that in your own time, you're going to be called to do things that are hard. But you have privilege, and with privilege comes great responsibility. So when you're asked to do something that requires you to step out of your comfort zone, to work hard, to make sacrifices that you don't think that you can make on a personal level, I want you to know that just like Anna's been there to support me, I'm going to be there to support you. And in the process, you're going to be tempted to sacrifice integrity. Don't do it. You will never, ever be able to get that back. To Alaskans who are watching today and feeling discouraged by the process, don't be discouraged. This is why we have an independent judiciary. This is why a minority can come before you, as Melanie and I have, confident that our Constitution is strong enough and flexible enough to give the court the power to do what the five of us today could. Democracy isn't always easy, and it isn't always clean, but it must be fair. And reapportionment is nothing if it's not fair. I can't sign on to a map today when one member said that she was splitting Eagle River to get Eagle River more representation, and two other members refused to acknowledge her words time and time and time again. It's unfortunate that we've arrived at this place. It's not entirely surprising. And I want to thank Alaskans again for having us in your community. When the board comes back in another 10 years, please invite them into your community. And if we've got nothing out of this process, we have a new state law that says the next time this board tries to engage in an unconstitutional partisan gerrymander, it will be struck down every time under Alaska's Equal Protection Clause. And I'm happy and proud that that's something that Melanie and I helped achieve. Thank you. I appreciate the former Speaker of the House reaching out to me and asking me to serve in this role. It has been an honor of a lifetime.
Thank you, Nicole. If there's no further comments, the chair would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Motion before us and seconded to adjourn. Discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chair, just under discussion, I don't know if you can see it in the chat box, and it's probably a moot issue at this point, but we have a member of the public who said that the video record shows that Mr. Simpson said on April 6th at 2 hours and 58 minutes that the public should weigh in after the board makes a choice, but before they take final action. And the person attached to Vimeo. So I wanted to bring that to your attention.
Okay, thank you. And just a further comment on that, I think that's what we did, actually. We put the proposals out there to comment on it and then took final action. But we can, you know, I'll maybe remember it differently or have a difference of opinion. But with that.
Well, that's what we did do.
Okay. Any further discussion? Is there objection to the motion? Hearing none, the motion is adopted and we are adjourned. Thank you.